present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome, sadly, to the last show in the series. However, before the sense of occasion overwhelms us and we throw a party, Catriona Young has a cutting from the Westmorland Gazette.
Giving evidence against a Furness man charged with being drunk and disorderly, a Barrow policeman said he knew the man was drunk because he had a glazed look in his eye. The case was dismissed when the defendant's solicitor duly rose to inform magistrates that his client had a glass eye.
Well, many thanks to Mr. P. Walker of Kendal for spotting that one. Well, it's time to meet the teams now. Unfortunately, neither Richard Ingrams nor Alan Corran are with us today. They've obviously got stuck in the traffic jam around King's Cross. However, we're extremely fortunate to have on my right two broadcasters who know the backstreet route to the studio, Martin Young from LBC and the BBC's Nick Clark. On my left, please welcome News Quiz veterans Gillian Reynolds and Mark Stein. Round one opens with a story from the Hartlepool Mail.
A Hartlepool pensioner unearthed a Roman-type coin while planting shrubs in a flowerbed in his Pert Road home. Mr. Robert Ramsey was delighted that he discovered a relic from an ancient civilization in his garden. He hurried to the local museum with the medallion, whereupon expert Peter Walsh pronounced the coin a fake by discovering it was made of plastic and had a button hook fixed to the back.
Thanks to Brian Collins of Melton Mowbray for sending us that. Martin, in the Ingrams Memorial seat. Your question, whose economic speaking at the seaside led to a pounding in the city?
This wasn't in the Telegraph.
Is that what I'm supposed to say?
No,
it was in the Telegraph. I think this must be Mr. Lamont, he of the amazing eyebrows, who stands up and says, "Everything in the garden is wonderful, and it's going to be a great economic future." And nobody believes him. Just like when Mr. Wargrave stands up and says, "We won't privatise the NHS," and nobody believes them. It's the non-believable conference. And the pound dropped after Mr. Lamont spoke, and the Bank of England have been spending an absolute fortune since trying to get it back up to somewhere near the dear old German mark.
That's right.
Good God, is it?
Still bit, wasn't in the Telegraph.
A bit political, but it was all right. Yes, it just refers...
you'll do his Prince Charles impressions in a minute.
Well, good.
They're no better.
This refers to Norman Lamont's conference address on the economy, which gave so little away delegates started to think it was a rerun of his last budget speech. By the end of his talk, you could have heard a pin drop, if it hadn't been for the noise of the pound falling against the dollar... the mark and the West Samoan conch shell. Nick, who isn't putting up a title fight?
The Duchess of the... Mrs. Thatcher has decided that she is not, after all, to become a duchess. Or rather, she's not to seek to become a duchess, which is not necessarily the same thing.
She won't have a duchy imposed upon her.
Yes, yeah, very good.
Or even a duke.
Less specific about that, actually.
Nick gets the marks. This is the letter written by Margaret Thatcher to the Times in which she denied seeking a hereditary peerage. The ex-Prime Minister, it seems, is content with her existing honours received in return for everything she did for British industry, such as the Gold Medal of Achievement presented by the Society of Japanese Motor Manufacturers. Meanwhile, Margaret, still glowing after her success at the Conservative Party conference, where she switched on John Major's Blackpool humiliation, will settle for a simple courtesy title, like Your Majesty. Gillian, who decided against taking the scenic route?
I think this could be that dynamic figure, Mr. Rifkind. That mesmeric, nay, dazzling personage from Scottish parts. And without a note, he told the nation that the preferred route for the Channel Tunnel link was not going where British Rail wanted it to go. It was going eastward, like Drake. No, he went west, didn't he? Instead of going south.
That's right.
Speaks. Can you take seriously a route that involves a station called Raynham International?
People who know put Mr. Rifkin's strange change of mind down to the mesmeric powers of Mr. Heseltine, said to be building Heseville along the Thames sleeve, whatever that might be.
Yes, the East Thames corridor, I think. Because the new road goes up from Kent through the East Thames corridor, connects with the Settle Carlisle line, I think. Then you...
now you take, hear the word of the Lord.
That's, you take the night boat to Rock Hall, the ferry via Dunleary, you leave the Pennsylvania station about 3:45, read a magazine, then you're in Baltimore, and about 6 days later, you're in Central London.
Yes,
excellent route.
This refers to Transport Secretary Malcolm Rifkin's announcement that the new high-speed Channel link will run through Stratford and into King's Cross. Handy for the Director of Public Prosecution. whoever he may be when it's completed. The southern route through Kent was dropped to safeguard residential property and the environment, particularly the habitat of the endangered, lesser-spotted Conservative voter. Mark, the first musical clue goes to you. Well, that was Heal the Pain, and your question is, who's been feeling the injured party with a health problem?
This is to do with the Conservative Party's policy on the National Health Service, and they've announced that they're shelving plans for hospitals in London to achieve self-governing trust status. I don't know what a self-governing trust is. It's probably a surgical support that does itself up. I think, from the look of it, Barry's wearing. But whatever this self-governing trust is, it's now going to be shelved. Presumably, the government's going to put it on the shelf. So, if you want a self-governing trust, you'll have to go on a waiting list, like everything else in the NHS.
Health Secretary William Waldegrave announced the government was to keep its options open. So they've now got more options open than NHS wards. And the scores at the end of the first round are, as traditional, even without Corran and Ingram's, 4-4. Well done. We begin round two with a tale of sporting tactics the Welsh rugby team should investigate.
Coventry manager Terry Butcher put his side's 1-0 win over Aston Villa down to tomatoes and pool balls. Butcher explained, "I was showing the players around the pool table at the training camp, demonstrating how I thought Villa would play and how I wanted us to play. I used tomatoes and pool balls, and the tomatoes won 1-0.
Well, thanks to Tony Fernandez of York for sending us that. Martin, your question again. Who was sent down from Marlborough to Oxford?
The naughty Marquis of Blandford, whatever, yes, who normally spends his time in a £1.1 million house in an otherwise sort of...
Is that one of British Rails?
That's, yes, it's one they're trying desperate to sell. But it's actually in Blenheim Palace, and he's kind of, you know, sort of 43rd heir to Winston Churchill. But he, unfortunately, in the past has snorted a lot of cocaine and driven a lot of naughty motor cars, mostly while not qualified so to do. And at the moment, he's in a cell 10 by 12 at Oxford Prison. I could be wrong about the size of the cell.
Bearing in mind we're sitting in a private eye seat here, has anyone noticed the resemblance between Blenheim Palace and Oxford Prison?
Yeah, yes, Oxford Prison is a very splendid looking edifice.
It's a very fine Victorian building, rather the same style.
Well, we had it built.
You have to do your own slopping out at Blenheim.
Well, we had it built specially for him, us Oxford residents.
Lord Blandford, the self-unmade man who started at the top and managed to loaf his way down, was stopped in July while driving on the M40 despite being disqualified. In his defence, he blamed his father for getting divorced in 1961. But for some reason, the traffic police didn't think that was much of an excuse and arrested him anyway. Gillian, what's all this about?
Thank you.
Only five more to go. Oh, sorry. Gave the game away. The question is, who's hoping there won't be one over the eight?
Well, she says it's the last one before she dies. I mean, you know, what more ambition could a woman have? This, I think, might possibly have some relationship to a very well-disguised wedding that went on last weekend, somewhere in the United States of America, hidden on Michael Jackson's hideaway farm with built-in plastic surgeons and... Is it Elizabeth Taylor and her wonderful wedding frock and Mr. Fortensky, her eighth groom?
Yes. Your deductions is brilliant, miss. This does refer to Elizabeth Taylor, who said, I do, for the eighth time, when she married Larry Fortensky at a ceremony held on Michael Jackson's ranch. Miss Taylor had planned to be led down the aisle by Jackson's chimp Bubbles, but this was cancelled at the last minute. Obviously, Bubbles was afraid of becoming number nine. Mark, your question again. Which Albert is bracing itself for a heavy time?
Oh, this is all the latest in these rather extravagant Japanese happenings that have been taking place in London. And now you can pay, I think it's £30, to go and see two grossly overweight men who look like fat Larry Fortensky and Michael Jackson's orangutan combined. Two huge men in loose-fitting nappies with knitting needles grappling with each other. And funnily enough, they aren't senior members of the Conservative Party as well. It's sumo wrestling at the Albert Hall.
Absolutely correct. This refers to this week's other heavyweight clash, apart from Liz and Larry, that is, the sumo wrestling tournament, which is being held at the Royal Albert Hall. The bouts rarely last longer than 20 seconds, which is slightly longer than the duration of the average Liz Taylor marriage. The scores have taken a slight leap forward in this round because Martin and Nick have 7, but Mark and Gillian are in the lead with 9. We open round 3 with an important notice from Network Southeast.
Train service information, October to November 1991. Due to engineering work at Cannon Street, it will not be possible to introduce the full winter timetable on the 30th of September 1991. Therefore, May 1991, Monday to Friday train services will apply until November. The revised Saturday and Sunday service will be introduced on and from the 5th of October 1991. The new timetable booklet E will be issued dated from the 30th of September. Only the Saturday and Sunday service will apply until November. It's advisable to check train times before traveling at weekends.
Well done. And thanks to G. Standen of Orpington, where it looks like he's staying.
We had to wait until 2005, wouldn't
he? Well, thanks to him anyway for sending us that. Martin, another question. Who managed his journey without a hitch? I'm sure you know it.
Journey without
about
a hitch.
Hitchhiker.
Yes, I'm.
It's about a hitchhiker.
It's about a hitchhiker, obviously, Nick. You knew that, didn't you? You're just failing to help me.
No,
I'm not.
I told you before we started that we had a problem here. This is it.
Who managed his journey without a hitchhiker?
This is not the wretched Duke of Kent, is it?
It is not the wretched Duke of Kent, according to what I have here. But it doesn't mention that it isn't the Duke of Kent.
Is there another round? Should I just start another round?
No. We're trying to get an answer to this story. I thought everybody would have read this. It refers to the Palestinian who wedged
himself... Oh, he was 300 miles on the axle of the lorry. Too late.
This refers to the Palestinian who wedged himself beneath the wheels of a meat lorry in Calais and held on for more than 120 miles as it crossed the Channel and travelled through southern England in an attempt to gain political asylum. The intrepid hitchhiker risked life and limb, especially by choosing an English meat lorry in France. The stowaway was discovered near Slough, where he gave himself up after looking around.
But it's still quicker than British Rail's new Channel Tunnel route, I think.
Yes. Anyway, immigration officials promptly put him under the first lorry back to France. Nick, see how you get on with this. Here's a musical clue for you.
all right. I don't want to be responsible, respectable and clean. I just want to be myself and not just part of the machine. I don't want to be in the army or to be an English rose. I just want to talk about myself and my good taste in clothes. Na, 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 na.
Well, who became a royal fashion victim in the last few days?
This is a very unkind, it's a very sad story. It's a sad story. It's difficult to be humorous about such a sad story.
Well, be sad about it.
Two people turned up and vied with each other in wonderful royal uniforms at a court in order that one should be put away for stealing money from the other. This
That's
is
right.
the person who designed Princess Di's dress, was it? No,
yes.
No.
Princess...
No. No,
Fergie's dress.
Yes, the Duchess of Dulwich's dress.
She was called Lintke-Kyrie.
That's her. However, she designs the dresses for very important royal people.
And her friend Nixon.
And her friend, unfortunately, also likes them.
Should she be sent to jail, Miss Jackson's experience will be invaluable in the design of off-the-shoulder mailbags, ball-and-chain gowns, and a new suit for the Marquess of Blandford in traditional arrow pattern fabric. Gillian, where did holy blood prove to be thicker than water?
This has got nothing to do with Ireland's stalwart win over Zimbabwe in the Rugby Union World Cup, to which I am riveted, I might say, Barry. Are you riveted?
This goes
to
the... I am you... riveted, you but sometimes my arms and legs drop off. However, it's a typical sample of British workmanship, no more mean. Anyway...
I know the answer to this, Barry. Can I have a bonus point, Barry, before I start this?
Cause yes.
I know that you have to get these things in quickly. This is St. Gennaro, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, having his blood turned liquid by alchemy in medieval days, so that it wasn't, in fact, anything to do with divine intervention. It was a chap with a piece of rock from Mount Etna who rubbed it on the wound of the particular figure, and blood started to pour out, and everybody fell down and became a Catholic.
That's right.
And that's how we got to where we are today.
That's right.
You probably cut that bit out.
You can get blood from a stone.
That's it. That's wonderfully done. Yes, of course. You're absolutely right. This concerns a blood sample taken from San Januarius shortly before he was martyred in 305 AD, which, as he wasn't around to receive the results of his test, sat on a shelf in Naples for 1,000 years. It seems they had a National Health Service early in Italy. The phenomenon, commonly known as thixotropy, that's easy for some of us to say. The ability of a solid to spontaneously turn to jelly has been given the modern scientific name of John Major's knees when she turns up. Bit naughty. Mark, which pint-sized thief made a slow getaway?
A milkman?
It is a milkman.
A milkman has made a slow getaway in a milk float?
Yes.
I feel I'm getting there, but...
But Nick got there before you, so I'm going to ask Nick. Come on, tell us.
Is this the modern equivalent of hotting? Because hotting is now out of date. It's called milking.
Hot milking.
Yes.
Well, that's what I have before bed, hot milking.
Where you drive around in a milk float and ram police cars at 50 miles an hour in Cornwall. Is that right?
That's right, absolutely so.
Is this what Kenneth Baker has chosen to crack down on? Is this
yes.
Slow joyride?
It's not funny at all. I mean, the Marquess of Blandford is stuck in this 10 by 12 foot cell, absolutely stuffed with milkmen. All with bandages round their heads from ramming other cars. It's not a lot of laughs.
Do you know, I keep thinking of the Marquess of Blandford because his wife took him in some chocolate and some licorice. And I have this vision of him there with a lot of licorice shoelaces. Do you remember licorice shoelaces? You know? And he's unrolling them and tying them together and putting them out of the window at Oxford Terrace.
Trying to get all those milkmen free.
You're going to have a milkman.
This is Cornwall's answer to the hotting craze when an 18-year-old Campbell labourer hijacked an electric milk float and set off with a police car in pursuit. The fastest milk float in the West Country zigzagged downhill. The driver was obviously under the influence of several cans of ski yoghurt and then attempted to ram another panda car. The hapless joyrider's luck ran out when the milk float was so slow up the next gradient that a bobby on foot was able... that a Bobby on foot was able to step into the cab after first checking for any Palestinians on the axles. The Milky Float kid explained it was either an electric milk float or a Skoda, and of course he chose the faster option. And the scores, like San Januarius, miraculously changed, because Mark and Gillian are now 10, but Martin and Nick are now in the lead with 11. And now for the beginning of the end.
Cat lover Olive Gray finally has a memento of her beloved pet after a 3-year battle with a taxidermist. Mickey, the 18-year-old Moggy, should have been immortalised at a cost of £120 by a Blackheath taxidermy firm. But Mrs. Gray ended up in Bromley County Court after a battle for Mickey's return. It was explained to the judge that Mickey had failed to freeze properly when popped into the taxidermist's fridge. The manager kept saying everything was fine, she said, but eventually offered me Mickey's remains in a bucket. It was hardly the same. Now the cat's skin has been rescued and lovingly displayed in a frame by Mrs. Gray's daughter.
And she's reported to say he looks nothing like him. Anyway, thanks to the many of you who found that in the Lewisham and Catford Mercury. Martin, this is for you.
Goosey, goosey gander, whither shall I wander? There I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers, so I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Who won't say boo to a sad goose?
Well, I think the clue there is left leg, isn't it? It's Arthur Scargill.
Right.
Arthur Scargill's left leg is a goose. Right. Something like that. And Arthur Scargill's goose is going to be continued, this saga, by my friend Nick Clark.
The goose's name is Gaddafi.
So it is.
And Arthur sacked him. He was pensioned off like most of the pits in Britain are going to be. And he was taken away to a goose home. And he's been pining for Arthur ever since.
Well, haven't we all?
This refers to Arthur Scargill's pet goose, as you so rightly say. His name is Gaddafi. He's feeling under the weather after being sent away to its new home on a nearby small holding. He left his old home, taking Arthur's other geese with him. Another case of one out, all out. Gaddafi Duck has since had trouble controlling his left wing, gone into a sulk and started hissing at strangers. All obvious signs he spent far too long with the old leader, whose only previous known interest in geese was to model his hairstyle on the back ends of them. Meanwhile, in the Telegraph on Saturday...
Open space. Is lead shot bad for birds?
Probably, yes, I think that's the answer. Thank you, Jay Warwick of Reddit, for that. Anyway, Nick, your question now. Whose hot, breathless prose curried favour?
This is the book about all the curry houses in Britain. There's a man who's been to 775 curry houses and tasted goose curry in every one of them. And he sent in a lot of reports, and the...
Yeah, I bet he did. After all that.
I knew we'd have trouble with this one.
I get paid extra for that.
This refers to a man by the name of John Loosemore. Who was voted the most prolific reporter for the... for the Good Curry Restaurant Guide, which was published this week. Curryholic John, the man who definitely knows his Madras from his elbow, has eaten in more than 700 Indian restaurants around the country, armed only with his clipboard and his trusty asbestos underwear. Yeah. He averages 4 carries a week. A tight schedule, which means he's on the move all the time. Mark, your question. Where did a wrong number lead to a lot of wet questions?
It is something to do with British Telecom. They published a phone directory, and under the heading for Thames Water, I think they listed some poor, hapless private citizen. And, of course, people in desperate need of water, like this fellow goes around, like Mr. Loosemore, going around all the curry houses, have been ringing up this poor woman under the impression that she's the Thames Water Authority. Of course, we know she isn't the Thames Water Authority because she isn't pumping up a load of sediment in her house. Is that a bit political?
Absolutely right, absolutely right. You get the points. This concerns the new Reading telephone directory, which has been sent out with the wrong number printed in a full-page advertisement for Thames Water. The lucky subscriber, whose home number was published by British Telecom, noticed something was wrong when he started to receive 6,000 phone calls a day. However, Thames Water customers soon realised they got the wrong number when their calls were answered quickly and by a friendly voice. Before we reach the final scores, it's time for the team cuttings. Martin, have you got cutting wise?
Yes, I got one from the Irish Garda.
Oh,
or
good.
About the Irish Garda.
Oh, good.
The Garda are warning motorists around the country to drive with care because of the high winds. In one incident, a part-time fireman was slightly injured in a road accident in North County, Dublin. Responding to a call, he was travelling to deal with a fallen tree. He crashed into the tree. Silly bugger.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Nick, have you got something
wrong? I'd like to record my distress at the fact that we haven't had the story about the man driving a hedgehog into the 10th green. Did you not see that one? No, I haven't brought the cutting with me because I was sure it would be asked, but a man put a hedgehog down on his tee and drove it, and it went about 275 yards, and the members in Clwyd didn't like it, and so he was banned from the golf course. It's a sad story. Actually, hedgehog curry is now being investigated by John Loosemore.
It's because they can only drive 200 yards and not using the right sort of hedgehog.
Gideon.
My eye was taken by the Daily Telegraph's conference notebook on Wednesday of this week. Press officers at the conference, that's the Conservative Party conference, were delighted with the installation of a new coffee machine in one of their offices, which meant they could avoid the usual trek to find refreshment. Some of the gloss was rubbed off, however, when they spotted the name of the machine's manufacturer, a firm called Kinnox.
Nice bit of irony there. Mark, what have you brought for us?
I've got one from the Times. According to the English Collective of Prostitutes, a pressure group based at King's Cross, the recession is forcing young women into prostitution, with evidence emerging that more and more women are taking to the streets of London to help make ends meet.
And on that note, I think I'd better give you the final scores, which are pretty good, really, considering Gillian and Mark, 13, but Martin and Nick, this week's winners with 14. Well done. And finally, before we leave you for the last time in the series, a sad tale from the New Zealand Herald.
Botanists who'd spent years searching for an orchid that was thought to be extinct sat on it during a lunch break.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Martin Young, Mark Stein, Gillian Reynolds and Nick Clark. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Diane Messias.